Chapter 29. Cerberus Hades, Delta Pavonis Heliopause, 2566. All we know, Sylvest said, is that Volyova's weapon has reached below the outer skin of the planet, perhaps into the level occupied by the machines I saw in my first exploration. It was 15 hours since the bridgehead had anchored itself, during which time Volyova had done nothing, refusing to send in the first of her mechanical spies until now. It seems that those machines are dedicated to maintaining the crust, keeping it repaired when it is punctured, maintaining the illusion of realism, and amassing raw material when it comes by. They are also the first line of defense. But what lies below? Pascal said. We didn't get a clear look the night you were attacked, and I don't think they are simply resting on bedrock. That there's a real rocky planet below this mechanical facade. We'll know soon enough, Volyova said, tight-lipped. Her spies were laughable in their simplicity, cruder even than the robots which Sylvester and Calvin had used in their initial work on the captain. It was all part of her philosophy of not letting Cerberus see any technology more sophisticated than was absolutely necessary for the task at hand. The drones were capable of being manufactured in vast numbers by the bridgehead, a profligacy which would outweigh their general lack of intelligence. Each was the size of a fist, equipped with just enough limbs for independent locomotion. Just enough eyes to justify its existence in the first place. They had no brains, not even simple networks with a few thousand neurons, not even brains which would have made the average insect seem precociously cranial. Instead, they had little spinnerets which extruded sheathed optical fiber. The drones were operated by her weapon. All commands and everything they saw routed back and forth through that cable, with quantum privacy guaranteed. I think we'll find another layer of automation, Sylvester said. Perhaps another layer of defenses. But there has to be something worth protecting. Does there? Asked Curie, who had kept her vicious-looking plasma rifle pointing at him since this meeting had convened. Aren't you guilty of a few unwarranted assumptions? You keep talking as if there's something valuable in there we aren't meant to get our greasy fingers all over, and that's all that the camouflage is there for, to keep us monkeys out. But what if it's not like that at all? What if there's something bad in there? Pascal said she could be right. Sylvester contemplated the gun. You shouldn't patronize yourself into imagining there's any possibility I haven't already considered, he said, scarcely caring whether it was Currie or his wife who thought they were being addressed. I wouldn't dream of it, Currie said. 90 minutes after the first spy had unwound its cable and dropped from the opening into the sub-crustal chamber, Sylvester had his first view of what awaited him. At first, he had no idea what it was he was seeing. The giant snake-like forms, damaged and for all he knew dead, towered over the drones like the limbs of fallen gods, tangled and haphazard. There was no guessing at the multitude of functions which these vast machines served, although the welfare of the overlying crust seemed likely to be paramount, and it was probably within them that the molecular weapons were first stirred to activity, before being released to attack newcomers. The crust itself was a machine of sorts, of course, but it was a machine constrained by the limitation of resembling a planet. The snakes had no such constraints. It was less dark than he had been expecting, even though no light was straying through the wound now, which was plugged tight by the intruding weapon. Instead, the snakes themselves seemed to radiate a silvery glow, like the entrails of some phosphorescent deep-sea creature, radiant with bioluminous bacteria. It was impossible to guess at the function of this light, if there even was one. Perhaps it was an unavoidable byproduct of Amarantin nanotechnics. One could see for tens of kilometers in any case, to the point where the ceiling of the overlying crust curved down to meet the horizon of the floor on which the snakes were coiled. Things with the gnarled, rooty shape of tree trunks supported the roof at irregular intervals. It was like gazing into the moonlit depths of an arboreal forest. Unable to glimpse the sky and barely able to glimpse the ground, so thick was the undergrowth. The roots of the trunks tangled and retangled with each other, until they formed a matrix of interlocked roots, graphite-colored. That was the floor. I wonder what we'll find below, Sylvester said. Volyova considered infanticide. There was no escaping it. By denying the bridgehead the information it needed to keep evolving counteragents to the machinery being deployed by Cerberus, she was consigning it to a slow death. Without the necessary updates from the ship, the molecular weapon templates in the bridgehead's core could not be revised. They would remain frozen, capable only of generating spore, which were more than 2 centuries out of date, incapable of parrying the relentless moronic march of progress exhibited by the alien defenses. Her wonderful and brutal creation would be digested down to its last usable atom, spread thinly throughout the crustal matrix, where its remains would serve another function entirely, for uncountable millions of years. Yet it had to be done. Kuri was right. Sabotaging the bridgehead was the only line of influence now remaining. They could not even destroy the weapon, since the cache was under Sunstealer's jurisdiction. He would prevent any attempt at that. So what remained was to kill the weapon by slow starvation of knowledge. Crueler, by far. Although none of the others could see it, her bracelet display was pulsing with the bridgehead's repeated requests for additional data. The weapon had noticed the omission an hour ago, when the scheduled update hadn't arrived. The first query had been merely technical, a check to see that the communication beam was still online. Later, the weapon had become more urgent, adopting tones of polite insistence. Now it was getting far less diplomatic, throwing the machine equivalent of a tantrum. It was not yet harmed, since the Cerberus systems had not exceeded its own retaliatory capabilities, but it was getting very agitated, even informing her of how many minutes it had left, based on current escalation rates. There were not many. In rather less than 2 hours, Cerberus would match it, and thereafter its fate would simply be a question of the size of the opposed forces. Cerberus would win, with absolute mathematical certainty. Die quickly, Volyova thought. But even as the plea ran through her mind, something impossible happened. What little composure Volyova possessed dropped suddenly from her face. "What's wrong?" said Kuri. "You look like you've seen..." "I have," she said. "A ghost, I mean. He's called Sunstealer." "What's happened?" Sylvester asked. She looked up from the bracelet, jaw slack. "He's just reinstated the transmissions to the bridgehead." Her gaze snapped back to her bracelet, as if hoping that whatever she had just seen there had been a mirage. But it was obvious from her expression that whatever inauspicious portent she had read was still there to be divined. "What was it that had to be reinstated in the first place?" Sylvester asked. "I'd rather you told me." Kuri tightened her grip on the warm leather cladding of the plasma rifle. She had been uncomfortable with the situation before, but now she was riding a knife edge of constant terror. "The weapon lacks the protocols for recognizing its own obsolescence," she said, and then seemed to shiver, as if shaking off possession. "No. What I mean is, there are things the weapon can't be allowed to know, except when it needs to know them." She paused, glancing anxiously around at her crewmates, unsure that she was making any sense. "It can't be allowed to know how to evolve its own defenses before the moment when that evolution has to be expedited. The timing of the upgrades is crucial." "You were trying to starve it," Sylvester said. Hegazi, next to him, said nothing, but acknowledged his remark with a barely perceptible nod, like a despot casting judgment.
"No, I..."
"Don't apologize," he said with great insistence. "If I wanted what you want, to sabotage this whole operation, I'm sure I'd have done something similar. Your timing was impeccable, as well. You waited until you'd had the satisfaction of seeing it work. The satisfaction of knowing that your toy functioned."
"You prick," Kuri said, spitting in the process. "You narrow-minded, egotistical prick."
"Congratulations," Sylvester said. "Now you can progress to words with 6 syllables. But in the meantime, would you mind pointing that unpleasant piece of hardware somewhere other than my face?"
"With pleasure," she said, not allowing the rifle to waver. "I've got just the anatomical region in mind."
Hegazi turned to the other member of the triumvirate present.
Would you mind explaining what's going on? Sunstealer
must have control of the ship's communication systems, Volyova said. That's the only possibility. The only way my command to stop the transmissions could have been rescinded.
But even as she was speaking, she was shaking her head.
Which isn't possible. We know he's confined to the gunnery, and there's no physical link between the gunnery and comms.
There must be now, Curry said.
But if there is...
The whites of her eyes were showing now, bright crescents against the gloom of the bridge.
There are no logical barriers between comms and the rest of the ship. If Sunstealer really has got that far, there isn't anything he can't touch.
It was a long time before anyone spoke, as if everyone, even Sylvester, needed time to adjust to the gravity of the situation. Curry tried to read him, but there was no way to tell how much of this he accepted, even now. She still suspected that he viewed everything as a paranoiac fantasy that she had woven from her own subconscious, one that had somehow infected both Volyova and, latterly, Pascal. Perhaps a part of him was still refusing to believe, despite all the evidence. What evidence, though? Apart from the reinstated signal, and all that it implied, there was nothing to suggest that Sunstealer had reached beyond the gunnery. But if he had...
You,
Volyova said, breaking the silence. She was pointing her gun at Hegazi.
You, Svinoy, you had to have a part in this, didn't you? Sajaki's out of the frame, and Sylvester doesn't have the expertise, so it had to be you. I'm not sure what you're talking about. Helping Sunstealer. You did it, didn't you? Get a grip, Triumvir.
Curry wondered in which direction she should be pointing the plasma rifle. Sylvester looked as shaken as Hegazi, as surprised at Volyova's sudden line of inquiry.
Listen, Curry said.
Just because he's had his tongue up Sajaki's ass ever since I came aboard, it doesn't mean he'd do anything that stupid.
Thanks, Hegazi said. I think.
You're not off the hook, Volyova said. Not by a long mark.
Curry's right. Doing what you did would have been an act of gross stupidity. But that hardly disqualifies you from having done it. You had enough expertise to do it, and you're chimeric as well. Maybe Sunstealer's in you, too, in which case I'm afraid it's just too dangerous to have you around.
She nodded at Curry.
Curry, take him down to one of the airlocks. You're going to kill me,
Hegazi said, as she prodded him along the flooded corridor with the barrel of the plasma rifle, watching janitor rats scatter ahead of them.
That's what you're going to do, isn't it? You're going to space me.
She just wants you somewhere where you can't do any harm, Curry said, not especially in the mood for a protracted conversation with her prisoner.
Whatever it was she thinks, I didn't do it. Sorry to admit it, but I haven't got the expertise. Does that satisfy you?
Now he was annoying her, but she sensed that he would only shut up if she talked back to him.
I'm not sure you did do it, she said. After all, you'd have had to make the arrangements before you had any idea that Volyova was going to sabotage her weapon.
You can't have done it since. You've been on the bridge the whole time. They had reached the nearest airlock. It was a small unit, just large enough to take a suited human. Like virtually everything else in this part of the ship, the controls on the door were caked in grime and corrosion and odd fungal growth. Yet it still functioned, miraculously.
So why are you doing this?
Hegazi asked, as the door hummed open and she poked him into the cramped, sullenly lit interior.
If you don't think I was capable of doing it, it's because I don't like you, she said, and closed the door on him.